at bat. Trying to keep Beloso at first. He ends up giving up the run, and the Tigers take an 8-7 lead.
9-8 would be your final. They take on Tennessee. Here's your start dates. We know for a fact that it's Saturday is game one, 6 p.m. on ESPN2. And Sunday, it's either 11 a.m. or 2 p.m. And Monday, if necessary, 3 p.m. or 6 p.m., either ESPN2 and ESPNU for Saturday and Sunday. We know for a fact, though, Saturday is 6 p.m. So we'll get into that. Chris Blair is going to join us tomorrow there as well to talk about what that experience is sort of like. Four games, the Tigers faced elimination. They had to win, and they did, to get into the Super Regional. Also, the NBA playoffs. Yes, we got a couple of games today. Can anybody stop the Nets? That's one of our questions of the day. We'll go over some of those responses here in a little bit. Plus, lots of players made available today as, let's see, how do we do this, Maddie? It is Saints minicamp. Well, it's mandatory to be there, but there's no practice. Like, there's nothing. There's no 7-on-7. There's no team drill. It's just weightlifting and learning, I guess. And you're okay with that?
I am nothing if not a learner first, so
okay.
You can't tell me classroom experience is a bad thing, but I could be biased.
We're going to play what Sean had to say coming up here in a little bit. Shane, you're on hold. Uptown Ruler, give me about 60 to 90 seconds so I can get to Sean Payton. What you got? Hello, Uptown Ruler?
Out of there. Now, the thing is, I want him to be against Dallas. I want him to play against Dallas. And catch a long pass against the Cowboys defense. Right.
So you're ready for the Saints to take on the Dallas Cowboys, right?
Yeah, I've been ready.
Okay.
I'm going to be more ready when Tracy opens.
There it is, Jordan. You were waiting for the Tracy's mentioned. Yes. Right. As soon as we get back to Tracy's, I promise I'll let you know. Now, here's the thing, Uptown Ruler. The Cowboys game is December 2nd. It'd be nice if they practiced and got ready. You're okay with this, though, right? You're like, Maddie's convinced
look,
there's like secret
look,
black
I'm
ops I'm practices going on.
Again, yeah. Not things I've said.
Yeah, I think I heard it.
Look,
I
wish they moved the game to Monday night. Moved the game to Monday night. Sunday afternoon.
It's
late
a Thursday
Sunday
night
afternoon.
Game. I mean, it is prime time, you know. Do you have Amazon Prime?
Yeah, but I mean, it's prime time? Oh, yes, indeed.
Yeah, Thursday night.
I wish they moved some of them Sunday games to maybe like early Sunday games to Sunday evening.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that way I get my popcorn and I can watch and I can hear the show.
Okay.
As the Saints don't put it on. I think Jameis Winston is going to light up the scoreboard. Nope. I'm going to be surprised with Jameis Winston this year. I mean, I was on it because he was with Tampa Bay. I don't like Tampa Bay anyway. I don't like Tom Brady. I never did like Tom Brady in the beginning. Tom Brady is up there with the Cowboys. I hate both of them.
Oh, no. Little dislike. All right, thank you, yeah. Uptown Ruler. I got to get to Shane real quick, man. Appreciate the phone call. We'll let you know whenever we get back out to Third and Magazine. Shane, thank you for calling the Sports Hangover. Gus Cattingo, Manny Hudak, Jordan Kleber. What you got, man?
Goose, how y'all doing today, fellas?
Doing well. Good.
Hey, ladies. All right, I'm David Griffin calling the Trailblazers, and this is how it goes. You call
Jordan, pay attention.
Hey, this is Big Griff from New Orleans. I'm about to fax you a list of our draft picks, and you take four of these draft picks and two players, and you send me Dane, and then I'm going to give you a bonus of Eric Bledsoe.
There it is.
I'm not even going to say that as part of the deal, we're going to give you Eric Bledsoe for free.
They call that some Lanyap.
Yes. That's Lanyap,
yes,
that's right.
Lanyap. Right. Any one of these four draft picks, and any two players not named Zion, Ingram, or Nall, and you can have them.
Okay.
And just send me Lillard down here.
Yeah, you know, Shane, once again, I am absolutely 100% behind you making all of these type of decisions. Maddie, not only for the NBA, but he's willing to help teams. What was it you said, Shane? Reach that championship level by selling Bledsoe. Or I'm not selling. Sending Bledsoe even to, like, football teams. That would help the Saints.
Green Bay. Green Bay, we'll send him there. And, I mean, we'll send him with a crawfish pot. And a 40-pound sack of crawfish along with him.
Listen, if you're looking for durability,
yeah, he is Iron Man of the Year. He missed one game
right.
The entire year.
And then I got one more. If that doesn't work, I called Denver, and I said, Denver, you can't pay Murray and what's the tall kid from Missouri? What's his name? You can't pay him, Jokic, Murray, and Monte Morris. So you give me Murray or Monte Morris and name your price, you know.
Okay.
Let's get something done. But we got to get one of those three players down here.
Shane, I love how you think.
I am going to get someone later on, either Thursday or Friday, from Portland to talk more about the Damian Lillard situation. I was trying to get Zach Lowe to come on because on his podcast he made these hypothetical trade rumors, and the New Orleans Pelicans were in there.
Yeah, so the coach is gone from Portland, and you know we'll see. Apparently, the ownership says that Dame is going to be consulted. And his input is very key on this, so we will see.
And if Griff needs, I don't know how often y'all talk to Griff. If he needs any advice, you know, he could shoot me an email.
I know a guy. Okay, so Shane, you're the guy. So when I say I know a guy, you're the guy.
Any 24 hours a day, like 7-Eleven, 24/7,
clockwork,
3:30 a.m. on a Thursday. If you need help on packaging and sending teams that next level player to take them to the next level, like Eric Ledger, you are that guy, and you're ready on your own accord, just out of the kindness of your heart.
Okay. If I don't answer the first call, leave a message. Right back.
Okay,
I know it's important.
There it is. Thank you, Shane. Appreciate it so much, man.
All right, Goose.
Shane's on to a lot of different things, by the way. He's just trying to help other teams reach that championship level, knows that, you know, the Pels and Saints, those teams are just, they're making their way back. And a guy like Eric Bledsoe will help any sport, by the way.
Here's the thing, though. Like, we kind of chirp on Eric Bledsoe, but then, like, look at Anthony Davis. Okay. And which player at that point is more valuable to the team?
No. I thought for a second you were going to try to sell me Eric Bledsoe like you're trying to sell me Ian Book.
I'm trying to get perspective.
Just Ian. He may turn out to be good. I don't
know. Listen, I'm not saying that they draft.
I hear there's a USFL team possibly coming to New Orleans. You know, that'd be a great opportunity. I actually, in all seriousness, it's something that we can talk a little bit about later on this year. I wonder if that happens to where, I don't know if NFL teams will tie into it, but I know that the CFL and the XFL are trying to work on a collaboration to where maybe something like that is like that, where you send players to the XFL, they get good enough to go to Canadian Football League. Now, the NFL, with their business owners, I don't know if they want to share any of that.
Are they going to pay them, or is it going to turn into the MLB?
I know there was a time where NFL owners owned Arena League football teams, including Benson with the Voodoo and things of that nature, and that's when the league worked. You know, Jerry Jones owned the Dallas one, and you had the NFL cities own those teams. Now, I wonder something like that with the XFL would help and would work, because again, while I'm having a little fun with that, it is true, because we brought up with Barrett. When was he ever going to develop? You know, in team drills, you get two snaps. Two. And if the center, Jordan, doesn't send you a worm burner that literally hits the ground on a snap, and then he picks it up and has to throw it because he's about to get sacked, or if the next play is a handoff and then whistle, water break, and then Drew's back in. Like, when is he developing? He's never with, you know, stringers or second. T.J. Barrett.
T.J. Barrett.
Like, so I'm saying, like, guys that you can develop and you can draft, but like Ian Book, when is he going to develop? Where is he getting the snaps? When is he going to?
When did Jameis Winston get the snaps or the development?
No, he was a starter. He was a draft pick. He was a first pick overall. He went straight in. He got work. He got snaps. Guys that get drafted later on in the rounds, I think a league like the XFL or a league like the USFL would be perfect for guys that are not ever going to get snaps, with good talent or starters or game action, you know.
But then
it's not.
I don't know. You see Drew Brees go down two seasons in a row, and that opportunity
the guy that they went with. Jameis Winston, a 5-year starter. Teddy Bridgewater was a starter. I mean, they're not going to a young player that's never taking a snap.
No.
From what I'm getting at.
But, and this is what we kind of talked about yesterday, is in a situation where Jameis Winston goes down in a game, if the game plan's already been executed with Taysom not as the backup, then there has to be someone on the depth chart that can step in and run the playbook as intended without taking Taysom Hill out of the playbook. And then that question is it Trevor Siemian or Ian Book? And Ian Book is possibly the only player, if not maybe Landon Young or Kwon Baker in this draft, that the Saints actually had a lot of pre-draft contact with. And actually, there seems to be some intent there. I don't know what it is, but we've never really seen them develop a quarterback before. So this just could be the start of it. I mean, you said how good are later round talents, but I'll bring up the obvious one, Tom Brady.
You can't do that. That's like when he always says kids out of high school come out and could be stars in the NBA, and he says, like LeBron James. I mean,
Zion.
Didn't
stop it.
Go
you're talking
well?
About Anthony goats. Davis. Anyway, here's Coach Payton on the quarterback approach this offseason. How's it been different?
Yeah, both those guys. When you talk about Jameis and Taysom, both of them are extremely hard workers. Both of them, are doing a great job leading, and they're working together, organizing the throwing sessions. And, I've talked before about the leadership in that room, and I think they're doing a really good job.
A little more on the quarterback battle?
Yeah, I both of these guys have been here now, so I think the key is getting as much of the work and evaluation reps that you can for both of them. That'll be a challenge, but we'll find a way to do it.
Okay.
I heard just don't suck.
I heard
exactly that.
I heard throwing sessions and both of them, which are things that aren't.
You've been saying since you've been doing the show with us on Tuesday, you think this is going to be more of a quarterback battle than people think.
I think that it's not as locked up as people think. I think that it's Jameis's to lose, but it's not one that's highly. It's really easy for him to lose that if he starts becoming a turnover machine again, because it's just that's one of Peyton's biggest things, which is just why this has always confused me.
We got a little bit more from head coach Sean Payton, which we'll get to after we speak with Scott Rabelais for a couple of minutes, get his take on what's going on here. How surprised is he that LSU is seeking another trip to Omaha? Two more wins, and they can do that. Got to go through Tennessee up in Knoxville. We'll speak with him next on ESPN New Orleans. Forever, at least until I die. Damn if you do, damn if you don't. I'm supposed to get a raise next week, you know that when I won't. Working for a living.
Join us for our Memorial Day sales event going on now until June 1st at Southland Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Fiat in Houma. Get a great deal on a Ram truck today. See all their new commercial trucks and vans. Southland has the perfect vehicle for your business with Ram's long-lasting new pickups or their efficient new Ram work vans. Choosing the right one should be easy. Get more for your business with a new Ram truck or van at Southland Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Fiat, 6161 West Park Avenue in Houma. Here for you yesterday, today, and tomorrow.
Time is money. Don't waste both running around looking for filters, batteries, and belts and related items. Fleet Supply Warehouse delivers. Fleet Supply offers daily scheduled delivery, including Bayou Lafourche, New Orleans, Morgan City, New Iberia, Lafayette, Thibodaux, Baton Rouge, the North Shore, plus the River Parishes too. Automotive, lawn equipment, agricultural, marine, or industrial. Fleet Supply Warehouse, 985-868-0430. Venture Boulevard, Houma.
It's Mike to tell you for Neil's Small Engine Incorporated. Listen up. That's what we did at Gravely. We listened to lawn professionals. Then we brought the professional performance home. Gravely residential zero turn mowers show the neighborhood that you mean business. Zero turns that are as tough as nails, operator comfort beyond compare. We've had 100 years of professional advice to perfect cutting performance. Just drop the deck, put the neighbors on notice. Gravely, driven from within. At Neil's Small Engine Incorporated, locations in Houma, LaRose, and Thibodeaux.
Avenue Wine & Spirits has one of the largest and most diverse wine and spirit selections in the city. At 2025 St. Charles Avenue, Avenue Wine & Spirits has some of the rarest bourbons, wines, and Japanese whiskeys, like 18-year-old Yamasaki. Avenue Wine & Spirits sells wine by the glass, and they've got free delivery for orders over $20. Dial 504-522-3864. Never show up empty-handed to a watch party again. Avenue Wine & Spirits, 2025 St. Charles Avenue.
That man's got some stones.
Believe me, he is no wuss.
His legend lives on.
Now back to the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Gus Kattengill, Matty Hudak, Jordan Kleber. It's a Tuesday. It's June 8th. I am happy to be back. I honestly am. Kind of.
Warm back up to us?
I mean, like, no, I mean, it's nice. I mean, we got stuff to talk about. LSU trying to make it to Omaha. They're in the Super Regional. Can anybody beat the Brooklyn Nets in the NBA playoffs? You know, things of that nature. And, you know, it'd be nice if the Saints practice and you think it's okay that they're not, but it's okay. Tom Brady and the Bucks did. They won the Super Bowl. That's okay, though. We will talk more about that and hear from Sean Payton in a little bit. But we bring in Mr. Scott Rabelais at Rabelais ADV, as in The Advocate. Covers LSU. He's a sports columnist over there. Sir, good afternoon. How are you?
I apologize if we have any trouble.
No worries, sir. I'll say this. Your job is to kind of capture things and then try to make sense of what we saw. How do you make sense of LSU's, you know, trip to a super regional here?
Well, I mean, it's pretty improbable given the season LSU's had. I mean, this seems like it. When you kind of look at the big picture of LSU baseball, you think, well, this is their 15th super regional since 1999. You know, this is what LSU does just about every year. But it, obviously, it's not been a great year for LSU. Overall, I mean, there was one at one point in the season they were 1-8 in SEC play. You didn't know if they were even going to make it to the SEC tournament, much less the NCAA tournament, but they did. And one out of the losers bracket, which is something they've never done, won on the road in a regional for the first time since 1989. Another off to the super regional against Tennessee, a tough opponent. But all of a sudden, LSU is looking like an LSU baseball team this time of year, and I think they have a chance. I mean, with, you know, the motivation of playing for Coach Maneri in his last season and the way they're playing and pitching right now, I really do think they have a chance at Tennessee.
Scott, I was going to say that. How much of a factor do you think that is? I know we always see that in what we do in our profession here, right? We always maybe write that at times or speak about it, guys that are motivated. You know, the last one, I mean, we saw even with the Saints trying to win one for Drew or things of that nature. Do you think that legitimately can be a case, or do you think it's just this team kind of tired of not playing maybe to their expectation levels and knowing that they can go out there and win?
Yeah, I think there's definitely some motivation to play for Coach Maneri. I mean, I think that, yeah, the players, you know, they have a lot of respect for him. They understand that he's done this for a long time and they're his last team, no matter what, and there's maybe a little added responsibility there. It's been a young team that's maybe kind of finally grown up. But I also think when you get in the heat of a game like last night, it's going back and forth and back and forth, that, you know, that's not what's on your mind. You're thinking about getting another hit, driving another run, making the pitch for another out, and that sort of thing. So, like I said, I think it's a team that's kind of, got a lot of young players in key spots. Dylan Cruz is a freshman. Trey Morgan is a freshman. Jordan Thompson, the shortstop, is a freshman. Coleman's a young pitcher. I mean, the kid who pitched so well in the late game Saturday. And they're finally kind of coming of age and playing well. And it showed last night in that they scored 9 runs and won the game. Gavin Dugas played well. Cruz and Morgan, who have been carrying this team offensively a lot of the season, were 1-for-9 combined. And they still managed to score 9 runs to beat Oregon, a game you kind of probably have to win in a slugfest because the pitching was so depleted. So they're finding ways to win. They're finding different guys to depend on. And that's what you have to do in the postseason. So, again, in that way, they've looked like an LSU baseball team that we think of this time of year.
Hey, Scott, you brought up Trey Morgan and just kind of these players stepping up. We brought him up earlier in the week on the show and kind of the impact he's made on defense, especially kind of at that first base role. Another player that kind of stuck out defensively, Drew Banco, really in the infield. He's normally an infielder, but he's really stepped up defensively in center field. And how much has that kind of made a difference in kind of pushing through this run?
Yeah, Drew was a player who, you know, struggled offensively early in the year, and you're trying to find a spot for him, but he's very versatile. He can play the middle infield. He can play second base for you. And then Gio DiGiacomo, their regular center fielder, who they like a lot, who's got a lot of range out there, been battling hamstring off and on, re-aggravated it again the other night. So Drew had to move to back to the outfield and made at least two, I think, probably you could say 3 really great defensive plays out there. And he hit the home run, late in the game for LSU. That was also big. So Yeah, he's been tremendous. You need someone with that that kind of versatility to play those different positions. Coach Maneri has said he might be their best all-around defender. I would say it's Trey Morgan, because Maneri said he saves a run a week for us, you know, with the plays he makes at first base. I think he probably saves a run a game for LSU with the being able to grab some of those balls that he does for those putouts at first base. But Adrubianco has been very valuable. And it's really interesting to see his dad, Mike Bianco, of course, the coach at Ole Miss, who a lot of people are mentioning, too, who could maybe be Paul Maneri's successor. They're heading out to Arizona for their super regional. But he said, your mom will be there watching you in Knoxville this weekend. So mom, Cammy, is going to be there with her son while dad tries to go over there. And who knows, maybe they'll all be together at LSU next year.
Speaking with Scott Raboli, sports columnist for The Advocate, covers your Tigers. You know, it's interesting, you look at the all-tournament team. Kevin DeGaw got in there, Zach Arnold, Jordan Thompson, Dylan Cruz, A.J. Labus, and Javon Coleman on the pitching mound. I would say, you know, Marceau as well, when you think of, I know it was a loss in the game that he started in, but, man, that guy just really steps up and has stepped up as of late, including in the SEC tournament, huh?
Well, Landon Marceau, he's been their best, most consistent starter all year. I mean, Jaden Hill started the year as the Friday night guy, who you think of as the ace.
Right.
Even before he started, I hate to speak of someone who got hurt, but he never really pitched that great, you know, except for the first couple of games. And once you get into the heart of the season, he wasn't doing that well. Marceau might have supplanted him anyway as the Friday night starter. And he just, you know, his record's only 7-6. He got the win last night. You go 7-6, you think, well, that's not great. He just hasn't gotten much run support, like in the Friday night game against Gonzaga. They lost 3-0, and you know, but he pitched well. Lost 4-1 in Georgia against Georgia in the SEC tournament, but pitched the whole game. Probably made one or two bad pitches the whole game, and again, just didn't get any run support. But he came back in there last night. He was pleading with Maneri to put him back in there and give him a chance to pitch on just a little rest. And that remains to be seen. You know, LSU is going to start the Super Regional on Saturday. They get a break there, maybe because of, you know, their Super Regional ending on Monday night. So will he be able to come back on short rest again and pitch that game, or is he going to pitch on Sunday in Game 2 when you're either trying to stay alive or trying to win the Super Regional? That remains to be seen. They probably don't know that right now. But I imagine if they let him go out there Saturday night, he's going to want to pitch again. I think he's been tremendous. And then you find a player like Coleman, who came in and pitched so well in relief on Saturday. You know, you get a lefty who can throw in the mid-90s at times. And then Mikhail Hilliard has been tremendous. I have a lot of respect for that young man. He's been in and out. He's been a weekend starter. He's been a reliever. He's been a midweek starter. He just does whatever they've asked for him to do his whole career at LSU. And now he's really coming through in some big moments. And again, that's what you need in the postseason. You need to have those guys who come through who maybe you weren't counting on at the beginning of the year, or even a month or two ago. But now you need them, and you need them to come through and play a big role. And that's what we're seeing from Adrubianco, Hilliard, Coleman, players like that.
Scott, when you talk to people that really haven't watched LSU baseball this season, and they just really started watching the past couple, you know, 2 weeks, what's changed? Has the batting just like improved that much? And I know a lot of people were kind of saying that they didn't really deserve a bid, but it's kind of hard to, you know, justify that with what they're doing in this past regional, making it to the Supers. So what's kind of changed for this LSU baseball team? Is it just hitting, or is there other aspects that's kind of, you know, come alive these past couple days?
You know, it's hard to parse just one thing. I think it's kind of a winning attitude that, you know, they've kind of found themselves and figured out, you know, how to win games. And that was something that was lacking all year long. You know, they got swept a couple of times in series, but they never swept anyone in an SEC series, but played in the tough conference. I mean, the SEC is the top number one RPI conference. As you can see, there's six teams in the super regionals from the SEC out of 16. And they just never could kind of get up ahead of steam. But I think they found some more relief pitching. The bullpen's been kind of shaky all year, but I think they've all kind of come along, beyond the starting pitching of a Marceau or a Labus or a Hilliard. Fontenot's pitched better of late. I think that's a big thing. I think you found players again, in the lineup who have, been able to give them more, Coleman, Zach Arnold has played, you know, last couple of games. Bianco, rather. Zach Arnold has played the last couple of games because trying to fill in the hole left by DiGiacomo. Gavin Dugas has just been smashing the ball all over the place, especially in the regional. Really deserved the MVP honor. So I think those things, too. Defense has been a little better. Malazzo is a great catcher. He can't hit well, but he's great at throwing people out and blocking the plate, and I think that was the difference last night, too. Maybe in a one run, you know, they gave up a pass ball that wasn't their regular catcher. He was hurt for Oregon. Well, Malazzo would have blocked the ball instead of letting the pass ball get by him and a run scoring. So I think all those factors, I love motivation, you know, playing for Coach Maneri in what we know is his last run. I think all those things have combined to make this a better team. And I think you just expect, there's an expectation from fans, I think players too, that this is LSU, they're supposed to be here, they're supposed to do well. And this is not a position that Tennessee, even though they're the home team, they've had a great year, this is not something that Tennessee is used to being in. They weren't in a super regional 2 years ago. LSU was. And, of course, LSU's been in a lot of these situations, and they know it, and they know what the expectations are, and they know that they're supposed to do it. And that might be a factor, too.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be the interesting aspect of this. Who has the most pressure on them? Seeing a lot of people already tweet that Tennessee does, not LSU. They can kind of go in there and play loose. We'll see what happens on Saturday. Scott, should be fun. And as always, man, appreciate the time. We'll give you a follow.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Yep, for sure. At Rabelais ADV for The Advocate, of course. He's sports columnist for The Advocate, Mr. Scott Rabelais. Quick break. We come back to Atlanta. We go get their side of things. Spoke with Caroline earlier this afternoon from the Tennessee perspective. She said the fan base is kind of mixed. Half excited, half like, what about the defense and the pass rush? How's Atlanta fans feeling about Julio Jones becoming a Tennessee Titan? Sports Hangover on ESPN New Orleans.
So on. The SiriusXM Listen Free event is happening now. Just press the sat button in your car to hear over 100 channels, including ad-free music of every kind, plus sports play-by-play and talk and news for everyone. Enjoy even more free when you download the SXM app. Hear expertly curated podcasts, ad-free extra channels of music for any mood, SiriusXM video, and the ability to create your own Pandora music stations. Don't miss out. Listen free now.
Geico presents Motorcycle Word of the Day. Today's word is gremlin. Is a gremlin an unknown and persistent mechanical issue? Or is it something large that gets caught in your teeth when you ride with your mouth open? As in...
Man, I gotta stop singing 80s power ballads when I ride. Ugh, keep getting gremlins in my teeth. See?
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
It's time for some straight talk. Sure, saving money feels good, but cutting your wireless bill in half? That feels really good. Like walk-off home run in the ninth inning kind of good. Okay, maybe not that good, but pretty darn good. With Straight Talk, you can get 25 gigs of high-speed data for $45 a month, up to 50% less than the other guys, plus no contract. All on America's best networks. Why pay a whole lot when you could pay half? Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise.
Bart and Han.
If you look at Aaron Rodgers and you look at his age, they're looking at him as a 37-year-old quarterback. Not only does he have at least five more years of dominant football, but he didn't play for 3 years. So you need to take 3 years and subtract from 37 and say, okay, Aaron Rodgers, body-wise, is 34 as far as scar tissue, as far as wear and tear, as far as injuries.
Bart and Han, weekdays at noon Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN Plus.
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Now back to the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Gus Kattengill, Matty Hudak, Jordan Kleber with you in 10 minutes, Matty. I want to address something that Sean Payton said today when he spoke to local media. Again, it's a mandatory mini camp, but there's no real practice. Anyway, we'll get into that in a sec. But he does touch on his philosophy and how he's going to use game three. Remember, only three games of the preseason. So I definitely want to touch on that because I think that is kind of big with what Taysom Hill had to say today. It's a couple of teams, a couple of players were made available by the team, even though there's no on-field work going on. Now time to go behind enemy lines here and see how things are going on in Atlanta.
It's time now to go behind enemy lines.
Mr. Michael Rothstein is going to join us here. I remember, sir, that you cover the Detroit Lions. Now moving on to take on the Atlanta Falcons beat, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. I am just wherever I go. Star Hall of Fame receivers are short to leave. So that is basically what I am up to.
I was going to say Matthew Stafford, and but were you still there though for the mother of all press conferences introducing a new head coach though?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I was still there for that. I was taking a deep cut all the way back to Calvin Johnson and Golden Tate. I mean, I've covered three Pro Bowl receivers in my now I guess I'll be nine seasons covering the NFL. One retired early because of injuries and, you know, the Lions not being great, and Calvin Johnson, and two got traded in part because they weren't happy in Julio Jones and Golden Tate. So yeah, I have a nice track record going for me here. But yes, I covered the Dan Campbell and the ECAP press conference. I think I actually was on your show.
Yeah.
Right after that, if I remember correctly, and we kind of talked about that a little bit.
We did. I loved it.
Yeah, no, I think I'm still, even though I've been in Atlanta for 11 days, I've been covering the Falcons for about 2 months, I still pay attention to what Dan Campbell is doing up in Detroit, because I think he is the most interesting coach in the NFL. As far as you don't know what to necessarily expect, it potentially is going to be entertaining, which is, you know, not something you can say about many NFL head coaches, at least with any sort of regularity. And I just think it's a breath of fresh air for a league, and for a league that can maybe use it, but certainly for a team that needs it.
I gotta say, when I saw a couple days ago over the weekend, he wore like a Formula One, you know, helmet. I was like, yes. Now, granted, he's going to be like the Grand Marshal one, but I saw that. I'm like, what is this about? I can't wait to click on it. Arthur Smith.
Yeah, okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's the Grand Marshal at the Detroit IndyCar race.
Yeah.
So it happens every year. They have different Grand Marshals, and they made it Dan Campbell, and Dan Campbell has fun with it. That's the thing at the end of the day, right? For people who are angry and are all, you know, up in arms.
Right.
Sports are supposed to be fun. He is having fun. It's May, or June, rather. Like, I mean, there's no pads being put on. Like,
yep.
Come on, let the guy have some fun. Let him be different. Why are we trying to stop somebody from being different? That's all, as a writer, as a reporter, that's all I want, is somebody to be interesting and different. And, I mean, Dan Campbell was the epitome of that.
So you don't want to be overanalyzing like we're doing over here, you know, seeing catches by other Atlanta Falcons receivers on how the offense is going to be different without Julio Jones now. You would rather something like that?
No, I mean, it's A and it's B. Believe me, I did a lot of that, too, when Calvin Johnson retired, and it was like, okay, so how are they going to divide up the catches between Marvin Jones and Golden Tate? This is a little bit of a different situation, and I think you have a little bit more of an answer with the Falcons, where Calvin Ridley's still a number one receiver. He's still, fringe top 10 receiver in the NFL. And he's going to be now, instead of their 1A, 1B, however you want to describe it, depending on the week, with Julio Jones, he is now a clear 1A receiver. And then beyond that, it's Russell Gage, rookie tight end Kyle Pitts, Omaze Zacchaeus, I know I butchered his name, still new on the beat, still learning, Hayden Hurst, and some other guys here and there, and you see Mike Davis catch some passes out of the bathroom, that are going to get some work and maybe pick up some of those target shares in Arthur Smith's offense. But it's just the Calvin Ridley show now, instead of it being Julio Jones featuring this really talented up-and-comer, Calvin Ridley. You know, instead of it kind of being a co-bill, you know, if you're kind of transitioning to music where, like, co-headliner, you know, maybe at, like, a festival, it's like, no, every week, Calvin Ridley is the headliner. He is the Taylor Swift. He is the Avett Brothers. And everybody else is kind of, you know, trickling down from there.
That's a good way to put it. Michael Rothstein covers the Falcons now for ESPN. You know, it's interesting you were mentioning Dan Campbell's having fun. Arthur Smith immediately had to make some tough decisions and handle this. I did see over the weekend that the way the Falcons handled the Julio Jones thing after it came out that he had asked several weeks, if not months, earlier for a trade was the way to handle a superstar athlete and player. From your, you know, gatherings and chatting with people there, do you think that that's the best way they could have handled it? Because it did seem like, look, you don't feel that the turmoil or, you know, players kind of going back and forth. And look, you have a new GM and Terry Fontenot that came here from New Orleans, and this was his probably first big sort of decision to sort of make with this roster.
Yeah, I mean, look at it this way. If Julio Jones, which is really before he posted an Instagram post thanking Atlanta a little while ago, before that, the only time we heard from him was on FS1 on Undisputed, which really kind of set everything even more in motion, right? Or seemed to, at least in public chatter, over the last 2 weeks. And we still don't know how much Julio Jones knew he was going to be on live television at that point. Like, if Julio Jones doesn't call, you know, Shannon Sharp back, we may not hear from Julio Jones at all and may not have any idea. And who knows if, because of that, the trade request leaks out, because that got leaked. And it's not like that was announced by somebody. Otherwise, Terry Fontenot, Arthur Smith had handled it, I thought, very well, which was they realized that Julio Jones is one of the, you know, most favorite players in Falcons history. He's one of the best receivers, if not the best receiver in Falcons history, depending how you feel about Roddy White. And I think that they were smart in saying, hey, we don't want to, yeah, we're going to trade him. We're going to, you know, kind of take the bad press on this, and understanding that salary cap situation. And that's the thing, too, is that even if Julio Jones didn't request a trade, still they had major salary cap issues, and this may have still been the same outcome. It's entirely possible that would have happened anyway, because you have to make a decision between a quarterback who hasn't been injured, who's been incredibly consistent, and a receiver who missed half of the season last year, 32 years old, and, you know, you got to figure that sort of stuff out. So, to me, I thought the Falcons handled it about as well as they could have, considering the situation that they were in.
We've talked a lot about managing people on this show lately, and how they're kind of misdoing it in places like Green Bay. But if nothing else, Fontenot kind of instilled that, like, organizational, just having a good foundation and doing right by your players. But as much as it is, you know, that they handled it well, it does, you know, beg the question of what the vision is there. We had Caroline Fenton on earlier on, you know, the opposite end. She covers, you know, the Tennessee Titans, and she kind of predicts their offensive system going from that, you know, kind of heavier two tight end running type to a more, you know, three wide receiver scheme. So do the Falcons just try to replace Julio, or do we see them kind of sculpt the offense officially now, like, around Kyle Pitts and that type of offense?
Well, I still think Calvin Ridley is going to be a mess, and that starts there. But yeah, they have two high level tight ends, two first round picks as tight ends, and Kyle Pitts and Hayden Hurst, at least for this year. They didn't pick up Hayden Hurst if you're option. But I think that Arthur Smith loves tight ends. We all know that. I mean, look at the Tennessee offense, right, that you were just describing, that they shift a little bit. Well, the Falcons offense is going to shift a little bit too, and I think that you're going to see a lot of Kyle Pitts. I think you're going to see a lot of Hayden Hurst. I think you might see a lot of Kyle Pitts, especially if teams decide that they want to, at least early on, maybe double-team Calvin Ridley. And don't forget about Russell Gage, because Russell Gage is a good player. And Russell Gage, when Julio Jones was hurt, he's not Julio Jones. Let's not get any of that twisted, right? But he is a guy who could be an 800-900-yard guy for you, maybe even a 1,000-yard guy for you in the right offense, in the right situation, if he's a starter for all 16 games. Mm. If he knows that that's going to be his role, and if Arthur Smith and they see in the offense to be that. I think that he has that type of talent. Now, I think it's a step below, you know, the Ridleys of the world and players like that, but that's okay. Because if Russell Gage can be a good number two receiver, that's plenty of value for you with the Falcons and plenty of value for him, whether he stays in Atlanta long term or not. So that's where I think I see it going, is like Russell Gage, and yeah, they're going to use tight ends more than they did a year ago, but considering who their head coach is, that makes a ton of sense.
Speak with Michael Rothstein. I'm going to wrap up with you here with a final question on quarterbacks. Michael, it seems like, obviously, whether it's Stafford, Breeze here, the draft picks, the trade me ones, all of this other aspect that we've seen this offseason, man, it's been incredible to kind of look at it. And there's Matt Ryan, you know, I mean, pretty high in the salary cap issue, had to work with that and that number. Lots of talking. Would they draft the quarterback? They didn't. I think recently what he said, he still feels he has a lot left in the tank. What's it sort of been like from his perspective to sort of see this? Obviously, one of his top weapons goes, but also the fact that around him, he looks around the league and not a lot of people kind of talking about him at the, you know, end of the day, man. Just a couple of years ago, he was the league MVP.
Yeah, I mean, Matt Ryan is the symbol of NFL consistency. He really is. You look at his numbers, and every year you basically know what you're going to get. At least 3,100 yards, at least 25 touchdowns, somewhere in the range of 8 to maybe 13 interceptions. And that's just what he does every year. I think it's been that way for close to a decade now. And there is something to be said in the NFL for consistency and for knowing what you're working with and knowing what you have versus going and drafting, you know, sign a new rookie who you don't know if he's going to succeed and you don't know if he's going to fail. And so many times we see first-round draft picks who people think are going to succeed that don't for one reason or another, whether it's they were put in a terrible situation or the scheme wasn't right or maybe they just weren't that good or they couldn't translate from college to the NFL. Whole bunch of reasons, right, that we've seen over the course of years. And I look at that and I say, hey, Matt Ryan is consistent. And once they decided to restructure Matt Ryan, to me that took taking a quarterback off the table, because part of the reason you draft a rookie quarterback is to get that rookie quarterback contract and then build around that guy so you have a 3-year window. Well, if you draft a rookie quarterback and you are the Falcons, you're not playing him in 2021. Because Matt Ryan is your starter. Because you restructured Matt Ryan, you're probably not playing him in 2022. And then all of a sudden, you're sitting there in 2023, if things don't go well with Matt Ryan, with this rookie quarterback, and you still don't know if he's actually going to be the guy to replace Matt Ryan, because he hasn't, more than likely hasn't played unless Matt Ryan got hurt. So that's why quarterback never made a ton of sense to me. But Matt Ryan is consistent. I think he sees what's going on around him. He has said that Julio Jones, he has maybe had more impact on his career than any other player. That bears out stats. Julio Jones has more targets, catches, receptions, yards, and touchdowns than any other receiver for Matt Ryan in his career. So, yeah, of course, it's going to be different for him, but it's not like he's going out there and playing with 7 undrafted free agents. He's got 3 first-round picks to throw to in Kyle Pitts, Hayden Hurst, and Calvin Ridley.
Michael, great info, man, and perspective. Looking forward to chatting with you throughout the season. I'm sure you've already told that Saints Falcons is a rivalry. I'm so
I've heard this. I've heard that maybe
yeah,
like each other all that much.
Yeah, no, we're gonna be having fun throughout the season, man. So looking forward to it. Congrats on getting over to the ATL. Look forward to chatting with you a lot more.
Anytime. Have a great week.
Yep, for sure. At Mike Rothstein is the way to follow him over on Twitter. Now covers the Falcons for ESPN. Maddie, oh no. What did Sean Payton say today that you know is going to start the Twitter world? Somebody keeps poking his head in the building. Oh no. Sports Hangover next on ESPN World. Your baby loves love. Your baby loves love. And she's got
what it takes. And she knows how to use. Shrimp boats is a-comin'. Since 1948, that's 73 years, Alaria Brothers has been in the commercial fishing and shrimping supply business, stocking large selections of 12-volt electrical and hydraulic single and double drum winches and hydraulic motors with brakes, beltless clutches, and pumps with brackets. They also carry hydraulic stainless steel skimmer winches, hydraulic valves, and hydraulic steering for up to 65-foot boats. Also a huge assortment of crab traps and crab trap wire, stocking nylon, plastic, and knotless webbing. You heard about that new webbing, Tina Knotless Dyneema. Alera Brothers also stocks shark tail netting that's reinforced with stainless steel wire. They stock 4 different sizes of galvanized stabilizers, also stocking a large variety of fiberglass cloth, including resin, gel coat, and other supplies needed for fiberglassing. Lost an anchor? Alera Brothers stocks anchors from 5 pounds to 100 pounds. Visit Alera Brothers before the season begins. That's Alera Brothers, 894 Avenue A, West Wego. Online at alariabros.com.
Shrimp boats is a-comin'.
Summer heat is
is approaching, and so are the Red Hot Deals.
Red Hot Deals
at Greg LeBlanc Toyota in Houma. Shop online at GregLeBlancToyota.com or at the store. Great offers like the sporty 21 Toyota Camry or the Corolla with class-leading gas mileage and complimentary two-year maintenance. Or the stylish and dependable 2021 RAV4 and Highlander. Stop by Greg LeBlanc Toyota and make this a summer to remember with your new Toyota. Only at your number one volume dealer in Houma. Greg LeBlanc Toyota.
Goodyear knows the importance of keeping momentum as you head down the stretch. Momentum starts with movement. It's pulled from the air like a contested rebound. Momentum builds with steals and fast breaks, and is proven by deep threes as the shot clock expires. Momentum is how we change the game. And now it's time to discover where it can take us. Goodyear, more driven.
A man that likes to talk.
Now, back to the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill on ESPN 100.3 FM and ESPN 1003.com.
So again, several players being made available today for the New Orleans Saints in their mandatory three-day period, call it their minicamp. There's no practice, no 7-on-7, no team drills, Matty, no nothing. At least that we know of. You keep thinking. Didn't you say there's black op practices? Or like they're putting this queen on the windows?
You keep saying these things. I am saying again that the information is best kept when it's kept a secret.
Okay, fine.
And they're just not letting anything on.
Jameis Winston, Taysom Hill, Alvin Kamara, Cesar Ruiz spoke from the offensive side today. On the defensive side, Marshawn Lattimore, Marcus Davenport, Zach Bond, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, Carl Granderson. We'll have all that sound for you tomorrow, because they literally spoke during the show. We did get Sean. We're going to play that before they wrap. But one thing, we'll just rapid fire here, things that we took out of people tweeting what they had to say. Cesar Ruiz says he's focusing on one position, and I was kind of surprised by this.
Guard.
But I thought they drafted him to play center.
But I told you earlier that they had invested in a year in guard, and that they wanted to see that through.
But does that mean that they think that maybe McCoy played better center last year?
I think it means that they invested a year of time into teaching Ruiz the role of guard, and rather than make two players learn two new positions, keep strengthening
with
them.
With a new starting
positions.
Quarterback.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Especially that center role, which again, Eric McCoy's like learning trajectory there just really cannot be understated. The way he stepped in for Max Unger almost seamlessly. I think that it's just as important that Eric McCoy is as good as center as it is that Ruiz is play at guard.
Taysom Hill, on timing about naming a starter, what did he say? Essentially.
That timing is everything. But we are taking that to mean different things. You're taking it to mean time of the essence.
I wouldn't say time of the essence is, but I think it's important sooner rather than later. What I mean by that is I do think you got to go through training camp. I would say you got to go. There's only three preseason games. I think at the end of preseason game number two, the next day, a starter is chosen. And you give them preseason game number three to get comfy in that role. And I say that because this is what Sean Payton said about preseason game number three.
I don't know that it helps or hurts. It's just, it is what it is. It's the schedule change. It's unique this year. There's a few days required for the players to be off. And then, you know, the plus would be an additional week to recover from any injury that took place. But we'll approach the third preseason game just like we have in the past. We'll play a lot of players. So that won't become the new last one. That'll still be the third one.
Well, you want to know who started the last two third games of the preseason? Those were Drew's games. So that's kind of the game where they hone it in on the serious play. But if you look at 2019 and you look at that, Teddy started 1-2, Breeze came in, and then Teddy started 4. So there's really no question there. And then in 2018, it went Tom Savage, Taysom Hill, Drew Breeze, and then Taysom Hill again. So hard to discern from either of those two. But I think that, that Breeze always had that third game. And so that will be probably the one to look at.
Jordan and I have talked a little bit about this on how he's going to approach preseason games 1 and 2. You got to give each guy, my book, a first quarter. Does that make sense? Like, I got to see both guys with the bona fide starters. And in game one, you're probably going to have, you know, a drive or two. Though it might be longer this year. In game two, I got to give that guy a couple of drives, don't you? What are you giggling
at? Here's the drawback is by that time you don't have it decided. That's concerning.
So you think you're going to have that quarterback decided before we get into the preseason?
Considering that goes 1, 2, 3, 4 regular season.
Well, we only have 3 weeks of training camp, actually about a week and a half before the first preseason game. Just why, Maddie? We need mini camp.
Remember those throwing sessions they were talking about before? And I heard of fellow.
I need throwing sessions in team drill and 7-on-7, not throwing sessions against nobody.
Well, let's just say Drew Brees isn't stopping in the building to put his Popeyes order in. I
don't know what you're talking about here, Sean, on not having Drew.
I think there's not one specific thing. Periodically he's poked his head in the building. He's been in town for running some errands or doing some things maybe in a business manner. But there hasn't been that moment where, and I'm sure there will be, but there hasn't been that moment here in the off season necessarily.
So he just wanted some canes or something, and it's Sonic, which happened, but that one right across this. I'm here getting a box, you know.
I mean, just poking his head in, running errands, and then working with the business operations. Like, are we talking about Drew Brees?
I can see Drew's wife go, where are you going? I got to run some errands.
Her and Giselle are starting a support.
I got to, go get some stuff at the store or something of that nature. And I'm like,
I'll go get some canes for the kids.
Yeah, we'll go get some canes. I'll be right back. And I'm going to get 3 hours later. Brittany, where you been? Hey, why are you wearing a Saints? Did you go to a facility?
The least surprised person in all of this is Brittany Brees. I can guarantee you that.
Actually, Brittany's probably going, do you have somewhere to go? You've been here
And you're trying
pacing.
To teach.
Yeah. Look, the knives and the spoons are in this drawer. I don't know why you keep trying to change the other drawer. You're not audibling. There always are going to be. I have honestly heard that from wives who, like, people retire and, like, they don't know what to do, and they're not used to having them around all the time. So maybe that's – he's poking his head in the building, Jordan. Concern or no concern? This is how First Take would do it. Are you concerned that Drew has not let it go yet? Does it hurt in effect?
Not concerned.
Jameis Winston or Taysom Hill?
Not concerned.
This is how we do it. That's why I said Taysom, yeah.
Taysom.
What do you mean? Does it affect – he's retired from the game of football.
No.
I mean, technically
– is it weighing on their shoulders? Does it stunt their growth to see Drew pop in?
No.
Obviously his retinal still in the system.
Let's be honest.
If he's poking his head
would you ever be like, access denied to Drew Brees?
The contract's up, the contract's
up. Bill Vinovich might.
But it is interesting because I do think it is, of all the storylines, obviously, who's the starting quarterback is number one. When is that timetable and how do you have that quarterback battle?
You know, I wonder if Drew Brees is weighing in on this, honestly.
Oh, boy.
I know that.
Oh, boy. Jordan shaking his head.
He's not.
Yeah. You think Sean's sending the...
I'm not sure if it's solicited or unsolicited advice.
Think he still has access to the FTP files? And let me see today's practice, Sean.